We're on Singleton Community, and I've added home, church, work, play, social. And I figure that just about takes in the whole world. I think the song has some kind of truth in it, in the kinds of troubles or tensions that often result between at least single women and married women in some discreet sort of silent war. And that each half wishing they were in another state. And so it's always the grass may be greener on the other side. And both sides then are not quite sure that they approve of the other side, just in case. I think probably the marrieds have it in that the two-by-two, what I call the Noah's syndrome, is probably a myth in terms of the roles that are played, but it's a myth that has won certainly in our Christian society and probably in all of our society. I'm here to discuss today because I love my singleness. I'm happy. I've reached a point in my life where I wake up each day, except some days, of course, particularly after a long hike, in which I'm not so sure. But I think it was not always that way, and that's one of the reasons I would like to share it with you. I also should tell you we had a different title originally for this session. It's one of Holden's Holy Hilarity. The title was Saturday Night, Sunday Morning, and there's a wonderful book out on it. At least I thought it was a wonderful book, and so I wrote to Mary Schramm, who's doing the bookstore, and being in a hurry, as I always am, I said, this is Saturday Night, Sunday Morning is the name of the book that I want to do a book review on or discuss sometime. So, being a dutiful worker and looking into the secular world of books, there was a nice paperback called Saturday Night, Sunday Morning. She ordered it, and then she began, when she got it back, saying, I wonder what this woman is like. And here it is. It's the sexiest book in the bookstore. But there was a slight mistake in that I thought it was going to discuss singles in the church. And since the book doesn't really do that, but Carol says you ought to read it for one of her 60-second commercials, that is if you have nothing else to do, because it is not really as good as the cover says it is. And I don't know whether the other book is or not, because I have not read it. Carol said that it does cover the topic in...
Here's the last one we got. The first name is Nixon.
Okay. And it is written up in a couple of the Lutheran magazines, and it talks about what's happening in the church, and I think certainly that's terribly significant to us as we are dealing with the topic. As some of you may know from the last few days, quotes are the way I usually understand myself and understand the world. I have a paraphrased one because I didn't like the sexist language in it. It's something like this. If a person does not keep pace with companions, perhaps it is because one hears a different drummer. Let us step to the music which we hear, however measured or far away. That's a paraphrasing of Thrill in Walden. I am my own person. I think I learned very young that I do walk to a beat of a drum very different from those around me. I also learned to step to tunes and to rhythms of my own beat. And it's probably out of my own beat that I found my essential being, and I have grown confident and I think secure in my own skin. I've selected a lifestyle which at one time was certainly completely in opposition to our society, not only because I had selected singleness, but I had selected singleness out of the security of my own home and family. And that's a pretty recent kind of a movement pattern. And Noah's Ark's two-by-two syndrome was alive and well in the early 50s when I began to find my way in the world. I think, however, that one's essential being has to ultimately be found in the eyes of their friends, in the reflection of their own beings, in order to be alive and well. And that's really why I wanted to discuss this today, that those of you who are single, and in singlehood now I'm speaking of those who have never been married, those who are, well, what they call unmarrieds, which are those that are single by divorce or by widowhood or widower, as still making up the single population. I also include primarily those 21 and older, just by virtue of that is sort of the beginning time of looking about and seeing the kind of society we are or we are not living in. So when I'm talking about singles, I'm talking about male and female, although obviously from our group, I will be emphasizing primarily singlehood from the female perspective by virtue of the audience here, but I think much of it is the same. Some of it changes because the role of woman has been so different in the past than the role of the man in society. And so how we dealt and do deal with singlehood has some differences in the midst of it. I also would really like to be talking to couples about as much as to one another, because they are the ones, I think, that have to also do a lot of attitude changing. That they are the ones who perceive us almost more than we perceive ourselves as the spinsters, the unclaimed jewels, the poor dears. And when we see this reflection, it causes some of the difficulties, I think, that we have. I think some of them might go to the Bible, since that tends to be our guide in a lot of things, and particularly in the New Testament, and look at who is single. Jesus is single, Paul is single, John the Baptist is single, Martha is single, Mary is single, Mary Magdalene is single, and to the Old Testament, we have Naomi left single for many, many years. And so we are not looking at a lifestyle that is unfamiliar to those that have taught us in a biblical sense. And I think it can serve as some kind of not only evidence, but guide for fulfillment, that we may well have been looking for fulfillment in some of the total fulfillment in some of the wrong places, and that we may instead need to look within our churches, within our communities, and within our own lives to see what is the reality about singles. In the first place, if numbers are important, and sometimes they are, of all the members of the congregation, adult members of the congregation, one in three in a normal congregation is going to be single, either by over the age of 25, either by widowhood, by divorce, or by never been married. At the same time, there are 16 million women over the age of 25 in this country who are single, and that was a 1973 statistic. In the progression of what is happening, 16% increase in marriage in the early 70s, 38% increase in singlehood between 25 and 35, and 32% increase in divorce. So that you can see we aren't talking about a select little group over here of 1 in 10 or 1 in 20. Of singles in our society. And so we are a minority, but we are a large minority, one in which most of you as women will, if not staying single, will end in a single state, both by virtue of divorce, where if you happen to live in California, you've only got 50% chance of making it. If you live in Maryland, you may have a 60% chance of making it. But in our death area, we know that on the average, women will live 7 years longer. And I think that is significant in dealing with a singlehood on all levels, from the high school graduate all the way through the retired. And I think by changing one's attitude, for those of you who are married and or leaning towards retirement, that you will undoubtedly among most of your friends or yourself end up as a single person in society. And if your attitude has always been one of both acceptance and a possibility for happiness, at least there you have no adjustment to make. It's an adjustment enough in divorce for the grief that comes, for the feeling of failure, whether you want it or not. Society will pressure you into seeing some form of failure. And in death, the whole grief situation is tough enough to have lived as one for many, many years, to not also have to adjust to the attitude of singlehood. So that in developing a very positive attitude, I think we're helping not only ourselves, but the whole society by virtue of the realization of society. And the other large, large number of single people that I think we need to look at and realize the problems that are happening is in the divorced rate along with children. And that there are approximately in 1973 1.5 million males raising their children as a single parent. There are 6.5 million children being raised by women in a single household. And that adds another whole dimension. And if there's anything that I've learned by observing some of my single friends who have children, is that it is in that territory where it's really a difficult task to become your own person. Because you become not wife anymore, but mother and father. And some way or other, you tend to forget that you're also human being, adult, who has needs and who has a right to their own way of life. And then when the children get of age, it's almost harder than it was in the divorce to adjust. And that some way you've got to have the help and support of your friends, and if there isn't a lot of money, the support of babysitters, somebody to let you get out and to live as a human being, just as you did in the married state. And I think that's where the church has probably been the most neglectful, if not to the singles, then to those with the children. They'll take care of your children, but your own needs are not met, and then we have not really the full life that I think one can live. A very graphic example of the children is I was talking to Mr. Potter in Jack in the Pot Potter Shop, and he had a sixth grade class either last year or the year before in which 14 out of 26 of the children in his class were from a single parent household, which it seems gives a real illustration of what's happening in that area. And I'm sure that we could have a lot of discussion of raising the children in that area, but today we're going to just look at the adult that's raising that child rather than the influence of the child. So in exploring the singleness and looking at us as individuals, I think it's all areas of our life that are, there's not one area of our life that isn't affected by our singleness if we let it be affected by it. There's also not one area of our life that needs to be seriously affected by it if we have our own lifestyle that we have developed around it. I found many years of my life realizing and emphasizing my singlehood rather than my personhood. And I think that's probably some of the difficulty we've had in male and female. That I was busy worrying about being single or being aware of being single rather than being aware of being a person, and that my likes and dislikes were based on my personhood, not whether I did or I didn't have a husband. And I think once the realization hit me that I was my own person and that it was up to the society about me to adjust to me almost more than me to the society, It changed my sort of uniqueness and inner being. But I found that it helped me in living with those around me if I, in fact, was satisfied with the state that I found myself. And I think probably the most traumatic period of my life was when I still lived in that sort of unclaimed jewel state, which made me seem unworthy to myself rather than being the jewel that I obviously know I am. And so it's a whole attitude, and it really is not a conceit attitude. It is, but it's also a self satisfying self-worth thing that many people don't bother or need to think about, because they quickly moved out of the shadows of their parents to the shadows of their husbands and began to be whatever it was he perceived what you ought to be, and really didn't have to go through, or didn't have an opportunity, as I see it now, to go through the struggles of being your own person. And I think perhaps how I was raised helped my self-sufficiency. I think my mother had a daughter for her, and my dad had a son for him, and I could be anything I wanted. And so I was a combination in my way of life, and just sort of went about molding my being. But one of the things I learned almost too late, which means at about 35, was that to be single did not mean that one had to be independent completely to survive, or that it meant loneliness or aloneness, but rather that I lived alone in a physical sense, but that in an emotional, in a spiritual sense, that I lived with those that I communicated with. And that self-sufficiency is not a total positive. And once I grasped the significance of my dependence and interdependence and a need for support, then my defenses began to fall, and I didn't have to be the rock of Gibraltar just because I was single. That I could have weaknesses and strengths, not based on whether I was or I wasn't married, but that all of us have valleys and mountains. And I think it's an important kind of concept, because otherwise we're almost afraid to be weak, to have an interdependence on one another. And that there's no question that we were made for some kinds of communication, certainly some kinds of weaknesses. And once I realized that, it was a much more relaxing kind of experience with my friends, both my couple friends and my single friends. And I think the second most significant thing that I learned, and again quite late, was fairly traumatic to me, and again around 35. And that was to suddenly wake up one day, and perhaps not suddenly, but suddenly facing the fact that I simply did not, at that moment, want to get married. And I had played the game for many, many years of looking, and sometimes probably really looking. But I suddenly woke up to the fact and admitted to myself that I didn't have a childhood dream anymore of a white knight coming on a horse and taking me away to the never-never land of blissful marriage, but that instead I really had a commitment outside of a commitment looking for a husband. I was, in fact, living rather than existing. And that doesn't mean that I have said to myself now, no matter what great white knight comes along, I'm not going to marry him, because I might. But what I have realized is that I am not just content, but that I am really happy in my state. I see around me, perhaps, and that's why, some very poor models of couples that make me realize that it certainly is far better to be single and wish you were married than to be married and wish that you were single. And it's something we need to think about as we move into our models. Also, as a physical educator, Professionally, I've had excellent models. I've had models of women who were strong, who were what I thought was self-sufficient, and yet had an interpersonal relationship with many people, had a position in life, was accepted in their profession, and life was an adventure to them. And I realized that that role model has been very influential to me in my living, that they have stayed human beings, all of them living alone, and yet having a circle of friends significant to them. That, together with my realization of the community that I found in a church body, was something that made me realize that I was terribly lucky, both as a single and as a professional woman who had a career and knew that that was, in fact, what she wanted to be committed to. And I found at that moment that I then was willing to make my professional commitment of going and getting another degree, of going and teaching where I really wanted to teach, and since then, living as a person who happens not to be married. And yet, in the whole purposeful, ultimate decision, I can't say that everything, therefore, has come up roses. I think it's true that none of us are promised the rose garden, and in marriage or in singlehood, the same kinds of problems arise. But you have certain decisions that you can make that are terribly freeing. I can make decisions of when I travel, why I travel, what services I want to give to the church, what services I want to give to the congregation, the variety of friends that I want to have, the kinds of vacations that I want to go on, and basically what my vision is and what my commitment will be, but always knowing that I also have a mission within my being. So I can't sit and tell you that I would be happy as a single outside of Christianity. I don't know that. But I have the feeling, looking at some of my friends, I perhaps could not. Because there is a commitment and a personal relationship that I have with my God that is undefinable and protective of me. And almost in some ways, when society is pressuring me into something, I don't need to be pressured. So I'm not sure as a pagan or an atheist I would be happy. But in the state in which I find myself, in which I love my profession, and I love my God, and I love my play and my friends, that I have a totality that is exciting to me. I also have, however, an omission in my life. I do not sexually have intimacy with either a male or a female, never having to say that in the past. However, in my profession, I now find that I have to add that. And I'm not saying that is the road to happiness, that I don't have sexual intimacy as a single. I've done a lot of talking to an awful lot of college girls and women really then within the 21 to 35 who have found happiness as they see it outside of the marriage bond. I don't find that at this point a possibility in my life, but I cannot say I don't miss it or that it is not an area of my life which is left unfulfilled. I think it is. And I think it's a purposeful kind of thing that you need to deal with. And that we are, basically, most of us, sexual beings in our humanness. And that you can't ignore it and it's going to go away. I think you do have to deal with it. And everybody has to deal with it in their own way. And your pastor can't really deal with it. And certainly your parents can't deal with it. Only you are living in whatever era you're living in. The only thing I think I have as advice is that you have to be able to live in your own skin, whatever your decisions are, but that the alternatives are far larger than they were in the past. But in the having lost an exclusive sexual relationship, I think I have instead gained an intimacy with many more people than I could possibly do sharing with a husband. And that is a part of the reward, I think, that I find. I find that in friendship and intimacy in terms of a mental sense, that I have a variety of friends I could not have selected had I an exclusive commitment to one person. I also have found, after I quit having that gleam in my eye, that I've had much more success with males in the society and in enjoying males. And even some couple friends where I have been a threat to the woman has given up her guard, and we are really very good friends. But I think you should know I'm very careful in how I select my couple friends, because no matter how Christian or how careful we are, that if you move into couples' lives in which the couples are not secure and stable in one another, that you're playing with fire, because they're two jealous human beings, and there's always the difficulty of coming between two people in a marriage. And I've had enough friends who have had difficulties with this that I think it's something all of us must be aware about, that we need stable couple friends, not unstable ones. We may be helping some unstable ones, but that's not being the close human relationships on it. Now, I've told this before, but my rule of thumb is if I play tennis with a guy every lunch hour for 2 months and I meet his wife and she doesn't know it, then I'm not going any farther in a relationship. There's something that's threatening in that marriage that he never mentions, that his tennis partner is always a woman in play, or that it's the woman that he's had coffee with. And I found it to work really quite well. If she stares at me as though she'd never seen me before, and I've been a companion, really, or a colleague of her husband, then I say, goodbye, Charlie, and I don't try to have a relationship. But I think couple relationships are terribly important to us, and that we enrich them in their lives, but that care needs to be taken in how we begin to deal with this. The second problem that I find, and what I'm trying to do is go through the problems and quickly review the actions, and then we'll discuss some of the difficulties or share with one another in some of it. The next is another problem that I find in trying to deal with singlehood is that the potential for self-pity is much greater. Particularly if you really live alone as opposed to a roommate, because your opportunity to think about yourself is so much greater. A wife, a mother, a husband, the children have to be concerned in an interpersonal kind of relationship whether you're happy that day or you aren't. But if I get up alone, I eat my dinner alone, and I have the whole evening free, then the possibility of self-pity is so much greater within the single society, and that you need to work out ways to deal with this self-pity. And along with that, I guess I would have to say, if I'm honest, that I'm far more selfish in a lot of ways and have become more selfish in a lot of ways by virtue of living alone, because I don't have to compromise on whether I push the toothpaste from the top or the bottom. That's for me. I don't have to wait in line for the John. I don't have to decide to get home at 5:30 for a meal if I bump into somebody that I want to talk to. There's an awful lot of ways that are little ways of making me more and more selfish. But I think with the realization of that, then one can begin to deal with that and can purposefully, in a sense, discipline oneself to do things that they don't want to do. And certainly in our normal work lives, all of us have things that we have to do that can take away from that selfishness. But the potential for it is there. The potential for loneliness, which most people list in singles, I would venture to say those of you who have been married and your husbands have died or you're divorced could talk about the same loneliness right with your husbands there. And sometimes even more so because you're not supposed to have it. You know, after all, we're supposed to have it. And so there's a little more freedom in it, but you're not supposed to have it. You've got a husband. And yet, when you talk about loneliness or the feeling of being alone, that it certainly becomes very prevalent in looking at it. So I think those are some of the cautions that one looks at by living alone. The other caution, I think, is primarily for women as I see it, and it's even more a possibility for those of us who are very interested in the woman's movement. And that is that we tend to surround ourselves with too many women. While some single men, I've also seen, surround themselves with too many single men. Particularly in the diversified society that we have now, and maybe it will not be in the future, but that we are quite different in our cultural heritage as women and as men. And that if you excommunicate just by chance or by design men from your life, then you have cut off a huge flow of possibilities of communication. And then I think you have to be careful with it because, unfortunately, some men, and many men, are not ready for me. I am an aggressive dog female in some sorts of ways. And they aren't ready for my aggression. They aren't ready for my assertiveness. And they are threatened. And so if I want to become friends of theirs, and there's a lot of them that I do, that have professional qualities that I would like, that have theological qualities that I would like. And so I have to be very careful to be able to have them in my world, because I have become more and more aware of the sexism and much less tolerant of it. And by virtue of that, turn off some of the possibility for male companionships that I think are really vital. Because some males say to me, as a compliment, you think like a man. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't really want to say you think like a woman. I'm a woman. But it's a problem, therefore, that one needs to face, in that they do, right now, the way our culture is, think differently. And they do have qualities that I think are unique and help me, and that you sometimes have to purposefully go out and have them as a part of your society when you are in the midst of some kinds of women movements and that sort of thing, in trying to deal with those problems. So that's kind of the general background. I think those of you who are single by virtue of divorce and being unmarried, that it is the single woman that can help a great deal. And those of you who are single, who have friends who are in the midst of divorce, or women whose husbands have died, that you really do know what the world out there is like. And that it's partly our responsibility in that area to try to help. And it doesn't matter age. Age is not the factor when a husband dies. It's no better if the woman is 70 or 75. It's the same grief. It's the same problem of singlehood, except that all of her friends are probably in the same situation. But you still can have a single perspective that can help in it. I think you also can have a fresh view of ways that you have dealt with singlehood, particularly in the divorce case, so that the woman is often younger, or the woman is in my age bracket and has been supported, and so must also find a profession, must find a way to work. And I think that you learn how to work in society, that women, by virtue of being discriminated against, who those of you who are single and work in this male world, have learned a lot that you don't even know you know about dealing with males, where divorced women may have been busy dealing only with one, and one that didn't work. in the sense that there had to be a separation. And so I think that you have knowledges you don't even know you have in dealing with males that can help in the whole process of dealing. And the next area then that I'd like to start on for our discussion is the whole area of the church. I think that the church has been almost completely neglectful of us. That they have almost ignored the 33% of us who are attending the church in our local congregation, except in those cases where they have had a nice little singles group over there for you on Friday night, and they'll give the church to you. Personally, I don't like the single gatherings. I've attended some of them, and there's one meek male, two exciting women, and eight thugs. And I have a very zombies, I call some of them. And some of that's our fault. But there are lots of interesting men in our congregation. The only time I ever see them is at a picnic, is after church for a little cup of tea, and had I been willing to play small bowling, which I'm not, you know, with the small balls left from the Danes of 1,000 years ago, and not even the large ones, and if they really have scratched to the very bottom of the pile and they can't find a bridge partner, then I occasionally get to see them in a bridge. And they are terribly interesting men. And here is my family, in theory. And I rarely, unless I take the initiative, call them up and invite them to dinner. And then they often are uncomfortable because what's the normal thing to have at your dinner? How many come? 2, 4, 6. 1, 3, 5. Even today, at least in the East, doesn't quite fit right. They always need to invite Ralphie, who I cannot stand, and he can't, as my partner, and I really want to talk to Jim. And his wife has just gotten a new job, and I'd like to chat with her. But there I've got Ralphie, who's, you know, right beside me as my partner. And I think in the church, perhaps, some of these things occur. And so I thought maybe we could discuss for a few minutes both the positives, the negatives, particularly in the church area, but also moving into the human development kinds of areas. Any starters?
I would like to ask you what you think is a good way in the church community to meet the needs of the single. The single group is not doing it.
Well, I think the single group can be for some. I think, for example, in Central Lutheran, when I was in Minneapolis, I used to come down from Moorhead sometimes. And I think they are meeting at least some that really would like to stay in a single. And there are a lot, I think that's one of the things that you can do, is have a singles group or maybe call it a fellowship group, because I have found an awful lot of fun couples. And that they too are the same age and in the same professional ways, as opposed to having singles alone, which makes it kind of a mating center. But let's have any other helps on her question. I think it's the fundamental question of how or what, or maybe it's a question of attitude.
I would like to ask also, in dealing with that question, how you would handle being a part of the family concept in the church, like every member of the church being a part of the family and meeting in that way instead of single.
Okay, let's answer the first one and then the second one.
I belong to the young adults group in a large city, and that worked out very well. There's about 30 to 40 people, and we call them young adults, and that way it was open to young single couples or young couples also. And then I moved to another city, and I got involved in a church that's much smaller, and the group is maybe only 8 to 10, almost exactly as you described, the eighth cousin. And we're trying to combine it with another church to make the group larger. But right now, we're having difficulty setting up leadership because everybody's pretty well involved and everything else. And I just thought I'd fill it out. We're having a little difficulty getting that going. I'd like to see it happen, but I'm not really sure what we're doing.
Is there anything else you'd like to see happen?
As far as the group is concerned?
Yeah, in terms of how else it might possibly work. Like the fellowship one. Did that work?
Yeah.
You know?
That worked pretty well.
Could you do the same thing at the new church?
That's what we're trying to combine two young adults now.
For the Friday night fellowship in the homes, we've had single male young adults coming very consistently and feeling like family and part of the whole thing. The thing I can't understand is there are single females or divorcees or Department of Defense school leaders. They come in and out of the congregation. They never show up on a Friday night. And I've never run into this kind of thing.
Have you asked them why?
Well, maybe I better start it. First of all, I can't understand red-blooded American single men, you know. I've been where they are, one of them especially, in one of the NCO clubs.
I know a church in North Hollywood, a very large church, and has a separate group for almost every age group you can imagine. I mean, there's the 18 to 22 and a half, and the 20, you know, it's just incredible. So that you get the feeling that it's all set up on the basis of a marriage bureau. And I think that's silly.
I think the family concept is one of the problems, that the concept of the church is family meaning blood relations, as opposed to family meaning the whole body of the church, including the singles in it, and that the concept of family means they set up family seminars in which we'll talk about parent to child, child to parent, which is fine with me. But if I'm a school teacher, I might well like to be at that meeting where they're discussing the two. And I am invited, but I am invited as a, oh yes, and. Or in our church, which has finally been changed this year, they had a couples club in which I could also come. And that is as offensive to me as being called a man in what the board is made of. What's my likelihood, and I'm a strong person, of going to that couples club? Pretty slim. And I see myself as a pretty aggressive person, unless I'm trying to make a principle and I went to a folk dance, which of course I selected the worst of all possibles, that I was going to be the only woman at this couples club folk dance. My pastor was beside himself at this.
Did he dance with you?
No, he did not.
That's too bad.
And his concept was, I ought not have to have put them through that. But I know four men who didn't think I put them through anything in terms of a good folk dancer in it. And about three of those wives who thought it was perfectly all right, one of them really hated folk dance, but she had to be there. And I selected that purposefully, trying to demonstrate the principle of that they had made it a couple's world when there need not be one. And they changed the name to Fellowship, and there's about six of us who are single who go, not always, but occasionally. And it's that word couple, or programs only for children. I think there are some 14, 15, and 16-year-old high school students that are just as interested in what I'm interested in, which is backpacking and volleyball and a baseball game, as they are in their own peers. And it was a great struggle to have a trip in which all people that are interested in hiking up Old Rag come. and it ended with all teenagers, one father, and myself. And we had a great time because it's like Carol said, on an interest group. There wasn't a marriage potential running about there, but there was an interesting group of teenagers in which I could help them, and they helped me understand this generation that's running around in high school.
It's kind of interesting you said that the pastor was taking some kind of responsibility there. Was that correct? And being a pastor, I want out of that responsibility. Doggone it, I didn't want anything to do with that. Now, how could I get out of it? That isn't in my letter of call, but somehow or other I was supposed to take responsibility that everybody's happy if there's a single in a couple's group bit. I feel that is shared responsibility with other leaders within the parish, but you get boxed in, and you try to get out of that one, you're in some trouble. And then your wife has to be more than understanding, because the pastor also, I realize I can't divest himself fully of responsibility, but it's the pastor that is the focal point for this whole organism of the church to function, to operate. And probably is the one that represents whatever we call the church to deal on a one-to-one with the singles, the divorcee, for instance. And, we've got a lot of things that we just don't want to talk about very often, in the local congregation.
I think that the pastor is given all kinds of responsibility that is the congregation's. And it all has to do with that family concept, that everybody ought to take responsibility for death. Everybody ought to take responsibility for a divorce, and particularly for divorce. It doesn't help at all for the pastor to be concerned about the divorcee. Not at all. It helps, but it doesn't help in the self-image. He's supposed to. That's his responsibility. But I'm not sure that we really take responsibility outside of our own couple group, single group, maybe some attention to the children in it. What are the other experiences? What would some of you people like that would make the church more viable for you as a single? Or is it viable?
Well, I don't know that this is going to help a lot of people, but in my situation I find it really comfortable. Two of the churches that I affiliate with in Eugene are the majority of college students, the majority of them singles or young families with babies or whatever, and with young children. And one church has a community for married couples that they own the home, they share the legal responsibilities, etc. Another house for community also, and that started out as just singles, but it just ended up where there are singles and married living in the same house, having their own private quarters, the large house. So, and that has worked out fantastic. It didn't work out so well when there was just singles there, because there tended to be a little bit of strain because it was co-ed, and there was probably a lot of not too mature people living there, and it didn't handle it just right. But it's been over a period of years now, and somehow having the married couples there has also added to the balance, I think. Now another church has several houses within the church where they have trans living or quarters or places to live for separate girls, separate guys type of thing, and that works out very well for that church also. To me, I think that's a real possibility, just because for the one church that has singles and the married living together, they're not separated into categories of single and categories of marriage. Married, they're college students, they're struggling together, they both have the common goal of community, of working out living situations, and really helping. I think that's the responsibility of the church.
I think if the church doesn't do it, that there's not too many groups, except perhaps the condominium, in which now you can buy into a family life, in a sense, by virtue of buying into a community or sharing within a community. But the caring should certainly be within the church body. And if it is not, then I think that the church body is simply not alive and well in its total kind of giving. And that I think the church still, however, has the concept of we'll take care of you while you're waiting for marriage, as opposed to the concept of we will live this lifestyle and that your selection is a good selection for you, and that it's a viable one, that you make an outstanding, for example, aunt in the family sense. And that's one of the areas in which I have found a great deal of satisfaction is with other people's kids, because I love kids, but I love them only in my domain or in my situation. And I have served as an aunt to a lot of transits in our society, and get strictly for me, but it through the children that they too are gaining some satisfactions and some adult role models that I think is interesting and is helpful. And I think that the church could do this. I certainly think that the church ought to be more concerned about mothers who are raising single, in a single family, being a father concept without having it to be have to be a sexual kind of relationship. And I have a couple of male friends who have the children. And I'm not playing a mother role, but I am playing a sort of aunt role, which I think the church could also play. But some way, the attitude of the church has to be that they are, and that we are, single people as a part of an essential ministry. And that our commitment, in a sense, can be far more total in whatever we select to commit to as opposed to the married people, and that they therefore could use or have us as a part of the total ministry in some kind of way besides the Sunday school. I tend not to like to teach Sunday school, and that seems to be the role they want the single person to play. And that some way, if they would ask me to teach the adult class on occasion, I have done that. But I don't like to teach groups of squirming children. And that, they put us in a role, both female and Sunday school teacher, that I think is not the essential role that I would like to be in it. Any other church kinds of... Maury?
Well, I do think the most important thing for churches to do now is to eliminate the grouping in the couples clubs and family get-togethers and so forth. I like Carol's idea of interest grouping. It's much more reasonable way to do it. And to treat each person as a person without plugging a person into certain roles, or if you think the churches should very self-consciously say, we've got a group of singles, and we have to provide a special kind of ministry we haven't been providing for those people. And, you know, what point are we at now? Is it easier or better to say, okay, we've got to minister to some people, include them in a way we haven't been including them before, and self-consciously say, what are we going to do for singles? Or would it be better to say, let's stop thinking of people as couples, mothers and fathers, or single people, and invite them to this picnic, and, you know, as individual people?
Individual people I would see as the ultimate approach. that ought to be taken. Then if the, within the church and within the comfortableness of this, they may also gravitate to a lot of singles doing something or other and then deciding to do it. You might have some mothers gravitating to wanting to deal with the problems they're having with their children. You may have some fathers that want to discuss what in the world they're doing with their teenagers. Mm-hmm. And so that it's a natural outgrowth, not of the pastor who knows all of these things can happen, but I would rather start from the whole and go to parts than try to build from the parts to the whole. And some are ready and some are not. And some individuals can only be secure in singles because that's where they've been, sort of. And so I think you need to be open to both.
I think the church is probably one of the primary targets for the emphasis of marriage and the holiness of marriage and the guilt of non-marriage. And consequently, that the celebration certainly is a part of that total picture. And I think coming out of the Reformation is the getting out of the monastery life, the priests and the nuns as separate service to the church, and that to perpetuate our race or our Lutherans or our Catholics, that the emphasis on marriage, and not just marriage, but the same kind of discrimination I think occurs with married couples who have no children, that they feel the same stress and tension from the church as the rest of the world. So I guess I would like, I like all kinds of celebrations, so I want baptism and I want marriages, and I want, when I graduate, I want a party. When and in the church, I would like to have had a PhD party in the church. And everybody would have looked at me askance. But it was those people at Concordia College who had encouraged me as a female to go ahead and do that. And I would like to have had that kind of a celebration. And it hadn't dawned on me yet that it would be the same as a marriage celebration. But since then, I think it is similar.
We've had experience the last 3 years of touching bases with the Catholics and the Priscilla movement. And then I haven't had anything to do with marriage encounter, but even singles, go to the marriage encounter, the priests and the nuns and lay people, and I find that there's something that comes out of that that's really neat, and I'm seeing what's happening now. And that is that you experience something outside of the local parish, with all of the kind of structures that are there, they're kind of given, you know. And you get into a different kind of a perspective. It's something like being here, you know. If we could somehow or other package this and bring it back, you know, because we're experiencing here each other and all of us, regardless of whatever, you know, we don't know much about each other. And I don't think knowing much about each other is going to stop having a relationship with one another. We've all been to Holden, you know. That's kind of a new and different experience that can enrich when we get back home. Now, when the Catholics get together, I guess the Charismatics do too among the Catholics, and then they spill over into all kinds of relationships with other Christians too, at least in a far-off place where I am. And I hear it happening here too. And when those people get together, they don't get together as couples. They don't get together as families. They get together as persons. And it's beautiful, something different I've ever experienced.
I think that is an exciting sort of thought.
I'm still back on my interest activities instead of age group and sex activities. And one of the problems that I see with that, I mean, I've tried to convince my church that it ought to have activities that are open to all kinds of people who are interested. One of the problems with that is who organizes. It's always better, it's always neater to have nice categories. Then you can have a president who arranges for an activity. If you don't have that, then you're going to have to either, then the pastor is going to have to be in charge of saying, let's have a camping trip, and who's going to be in charge of it, or let's have a
let's have a marriage counselor come in and talk about problems with early childhood training, or, you know, whatever it is. The problem is, becomes who organizes, who calls together a meeting if you don't have those kinds of strict categories. And I think there's a real difficulty in organizational structure, and that's probably one of the reasons why the church falls into that, that those new patterns. You're going to have a program director in the church.
Yeah, I think it's one that can be dealt with if someone is really interested in an area. They may not be an outright leader, but they can become a leader in that one area, I think, with some kinds of encouragement and time, which can happen. But I do think interest is important. Those that wanted to go to the pottery shop today, they didn't say every female go to the pottery shop today. Or only those who are great artists will draw this afternoon. But anybody that wants to go on the nature hike can go on the nature hike. Now, we put age categories here in some ways by virtue of interest, in a sense, and with the children. But otherwise, we really haven't done that here. And I don't know, and it's the only gathering I bet I've been in a long time, I don't know who is single and who is not here. And I don't know which husband belongs to which wife here. And I think it's an exciting sort of situation, and it can also happen in a church situation, or you can make it happen in almost any kind of a situation. But I spent my time on the church because I believe the church ought to be the support group for any group, either single, couple, or whatever, in order to go out and live in the world that we live in. And that if we don't have a support group which understands our faith and our commitment, that it certainly is far more difficult to do it outside of the church. If I have a commitment which makes me worry in my value systems and in my life about my faith, it's not going to help me to have commitments outside of it. And that's why I think the church is terribly important. But I also see, by my title, it's singles in community. And so I think it's also important that you live in the society with an understanding of your singlehood, your personhood, and the importance of doing that which you wish to do in society, as well as within the church, and that perhaps maybe you can feel almost more freedom outside of the church for sharing, for caring, for changing not only your attitudes, but those around you. And that the only way, however, that the attitude changes is within your own vision, that you see yourself as an important human being, whether you are or you aren't married, whether there is a possibility for it or a desire for it or there is not, that you have your own vision, your own sense of mission, your own sense of commitment, and that then having that, if you ultimately also have a commitment as a husband or a wife, that that commitment makes the two of you even a larger whole and greater by virtue of your self-understanding and your self-confidence and really being satisfied in your own skin. And for those of you who are new at being single, my hope is that you too can begin to realize that by planting the seeds of fulfillment with happiness, that the harvest of happiness is really what results, and that a basic understanding of your role and of your essential being is in a great sense up to you, and that if you want the church to change, you help change it. If you want the community to change, that you help change it. If you want your lives to change, that you can be a major part of it by virtue of your attitude, and that I think if all of us, married and singles, begin to think of our personhood and our uniqueness and our unique contribution that each of us can make to one another, that then it ends up in this loving, caring, happy world. And that's what I wish for all of us.